Welcome, believers. This is the Lucha Lowdown. I'm your host and El Jefe of this podcast, James Kincaid, a.k.a. Bimbo Jimbo. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
Modelo's up.
Hey, are you having a Modelo right now?
I'm having the last one from when you visited.
Hey, all right. So, yeah, the last two lowdowns, I was actually on location in San Diego with El Guapo Jeff Budd. But now back in our respective North and South studios here, we are doing this remotely. We're going to be talking about the latest episode of Lucha Underground, of course, The Gift That Keeps on Giving. This is the seventh episode of season four. I was eagerly waiting for you to watch this episode because, and I feel better about it after having rewatched it, but I still think this might be my least favorite episode of the season so far. How did you feel about it?
It's just kind of jumbled, man. It was a jumbled mess. If you look at, just on paper, the people that competed in this episode, it seems fine. And if you just do like a brief rundown of what the episode's about, no problems. But then when you're actually seeing it in action, it's weird. I did not like it.
Yeah, I didn't like certain decisions that Antonio Cueto made. I thought it was a step back for the Antonio Cueto character. We already sort of expressed our sort of displeasure about him eliminating one member from the Gift of the Gods match, maybe speculating that maybe he would add Matanza into it or something like that. That didn't happen, but what he did do with the Gift of the Gods match, while they were two very good matches, I didn't enjoy sort of like that splintering of what they're doing, and we'll get to that later on the episode. But there was some high-quality in-ring stuff. But like you said, it was kind of confused and just sort of a mishmash of things going on in this episode. However,
I feel like you take great talent and you take great matches and then you turn it into a mess through the booking as far as how you present it to the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Very well said. And so we started off the episode with Jake Strong, aka Jack Swagger, taking on Sammy Guevara. We have not been super enthusiastic about the new members of Infamous Incorporated and stuff like that. But hey, we did get word that Famous B's leg is going to be okay. The doctors managed to save the leg. So, you know, what a sigh of relief that is. I will say this, of the Infamous Incorporated members, Sammy Guevara, he can go in the ring. And I'm not high on this guy character-wise and stuff like that. I think coupled with the fact that we lost Dr. Wagner Jr. and Tejano, it's a tall order to fill. I was pleasantly surprised by this glorified squash match because Sammy did that moonsault he did off the top of the temple and everything like that. Like, he did some cool stuff. What did you think?
I'm not saying Sammy can't go, and I didn't think he was actually even bad. What was it, the season premiere? I forget even when these guys debuted. I thought he was fine in that match also.
Yeah.
It's just, I have a problem with what are we doing with Jake Strong? Are we going to have him with a rivalry against his old partners? Or are we having him move on to bigger and better things? Because you can't have too many of these matches. It kind of bogs him down. And I don't understand what's going on here. And was it necessary for Sammy to get some licks in? And then I'm not saying that wasn't a great spot. It's just the buildup to it was so slow. And that's part of the problem sometimes when you just have two guys.
Yeah.
And that's not even all on Sammy. That's on Jake, too. I was like, okay, I was waiting for it. And then it happened. And I was like, okay, that's great. But there was about 5 minutes of just dead match before that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I like what you said, too, about how much he got in on Jake. Like, you know, maybe he did get in too much. Maybe it should just have been a straight up squash with what Jake's doing. He's now taken out all of Infamous Incorporated. And I don't know how long like the broken ankles are going to keep him out for or anything like that. But I mean, if that's sort of just their role this season, then yeah, he definitely got too much in.
Yeah. I just feel it's sort of confused. Are we using these guys as a stepping stone to show that Jake is unstoppable, or is it going to be some sort of legit rivalry for a little bit? I mean, you have to kind of pick one or the other. And I didn't think it was necessary for Jake to actually have to fight both of them.
Yeah. I mean, well, or you could have done like a handicap match thing where he looks really strong.
That actually would have been better.
And beat them both. Yeah, he could have done that.
And then
they
could have gotten licks in because it's like, well, there's two of them on him. They're going to have to get some shots.
Yeah. I think the bottom line is they're trying to build up Jake Strong to be very important. I was thinking about this while I was watching it. If it was still Tejano and Dr. Wagner Jr., would this still be how the story was playing out with him turning on them and, you know, beating them handily? You know, because that would have meant a lot more. I mean, at this point, Jake Strong's beaten two guys that we had never met before this season. But if he had done what he's doing, you know, to Tejano and to Dr. Wagner Jr., those would have been huge victories, especially in the fashion that he's been getting them. So I don't know if they just had to call an audible or what.
If he had done that to Tejano and Dr. Wagner Jr., as much as I like Jake Strong, that would have been unacceptable. That would have been an obscenely push.
Especially with how, well, my thinking
Well, I mean, both have been underutilized. Dr. Wagner Jr., just lack of screen time, but that could be because of just other engagements. But Tejano, I mean, they never got it right with him.
But they were starting to finally push him towards the end of last season. I guess my thinking...
He was starting to fit, at least, to do something.
Yeah, my thinking on that would have been is... If they could have only made one taping, like Tejano and Dr. Wagner Jr., and so you do that to write them out of Lucha Underground for whatever reason, I wouldn't have agreed with it either, but I could have seen them doing something like that. That's all speculation at this point anyway, but you're right. It would have been, in my opinion, particularly unacceptable for Tejano because they finally started to build him up, and he is, you know... Look, and Dr. Wagner Jr. is a legend in his own right, too. But it would have felt like somebody that they really invested time in and undoing him. But again, that's speculation. We don't know if that's what the plans would have been. Or maybe Jake Strong just would have stayed in Infamous Incorporated and they would have been a powerful trios team. I don't know.
But I wouldn't have minded them as trios champions. That would have been pretty cool.
It would have been cool.
Especially with what's going on with the implosion of that trios championship team that we have now.
Yeah, absolutely. But the bottom line is Jake Strong is destined for big things. I'm going to keep saying it. I think he's heading towards like a Breaker of Bones match with Pentagon. I think a Lucha Underground Championship match is on the horizon.
Well, they're emphasizing his collection thing so much and everything like that. I almost feel like Jake Strong will play to Pentagon what Cage played to Puma in season one, where it's sort of like a brief but intense rivalry for the championship, and then they'll kind of go their separate ways.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. So, yeah, Jake went over very strong over Sammy Guevara, broke another ankle, added that to his collection. We then get the arrival to the temple of one greasy meatball, Vinny Massaro, who already has come to the ring with a pizza during Aztec Warfare. Antonio Cueto shows up. And he starts cutting a promo on him, talking about how, you know, how when he looked over the roster, his initial reaction was just to fire Vinny Massaro because he was, like, worthless, which, you know, not wrong in a certain sense in how Vinny's been portrayed. But then he decided to give him a shot, and he ordered Vinny a pizza with a jovial pizza man bringing it out to him. Was not pleased that it was pineapple. I hope it wasn't just pineapple. I don't think I've ever had that, by the way. Like, Hawaiian is good, but just pineapple.
I don't
pineapple.
Think anybody's had just pineapple.
Yeah, that would be weird.
That is weird.
But I am not one of those people that's so against pineapple existing on pizza in general.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, but so he gets him a
He's a good old Italian boy. I get it. Yeah, he should resent it.
Yeah, I guess. So he gets the pizza, but then, of course, I mean, we all knew it was coming. It wasn't just going to be a pizza. It was also going to be a sacrifice to the gods. What did you think about Vinny's sacrifice to the gods along with the pizza man and everything?
I think he's a fitting character to sacrifice in the sense that there's really
Absolutely.
Nothing you can do with him. And then I'll say this. When I was first watching it, I was getting mad because of how much he was actually holding his own against Matanza. But then I was like, didn't he also, in that tournament, hold his own against Cage briefly with Cage
yes.
in the gauntlet?
Yes.
So it's like, okay, I guess there is more to Vinny than meets the eye. So I can't begrudge him too much because he sort of can hold his own against godlike entities.
I didn't like it. I
didn't like it. I thought it was goofy as hell. And we just started sacrificing people. And I thought we've had two good sacrifices. They were brief, but they were cool. And now we've had two characters that we sort of know. At least there's somewhat a history with them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought it was too soon to do something like so silly within the confines of a very serious concept, or at least it's a concept that should be taken seriously, but if it's not, it can then come off goofy. So I didn't like that.
The worst part came after the sacrifice.
What do you mean?
With the delivery.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Absolutely.
Was just all cartoon shtick.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I didn't like how much he held his own. I didn't like when he was holding his own, then he just tired himself out on the ropes. I thought that was goofy. And look, there's time and place for some silliness in pro wrestling and everything like that. I'm not a Jim Cornette that doesn't see, like, a role for it and everything. But this to me was out of place. He should have just stomped Vinny, and that should have been the end of it. But
unless they're actually sacrificing him to gods, I don't think Jim Cornette wants anything to do with it. If they actually did sacrifice him to gods, I think he'd be all right.
Yeah, agreed. My whole thing with that was, yeah, then you bring in the pizza boy after the match, too, getting, like, stealing, what is he, stole Vinny's wallet or something like that? And
yeah, and then was going to give it to Matanza, and then it's all just, like, goofy cartoon shtick.
Yeah, so they ended up sacrificing
both. And then he gets
both.
Sacrificed.
Yeah, they sacrificed them both. So I was not...
gods even want those sacrifices? It's not the same as getting a Mr. Pectacular.
It is not. Or an Officer Reyes.
Yeah, exactly. That one was really cool because it just made sense to me.
Yeah.
This cop is just in over his head. I mean, how awful has his life been the past few years?
I think both really made sense to me, because obviously Mr. Pectacular is this, like, he's this chiseled specimen and everything like that. You know, he's this new sort of brash.
I know, give that man a gauntlet.
He's this new, very brash member of the temple and everything. Yeah. Like, it's very Mortal Kombat. Like, somebody that you think, like, is coming in, coming in and, like, acting like they're going to be hot stuff and then just immediately getting destroyed by Goro kind of deal is how I saw it. So I liked that. But yeah, this to me, while I think it's cool, I think the concept of sacrificing is cool because, again, it shows Lucha Underground's willingness to straight up kill off characters, which is very innovative in pro wrestling. They weren't really doing much with Vinny, so I was fine with him being sacrificed, but it should have been much more straightforward. Again, it was only like a minute long, but it should have just been no offense. You're done. That's it. Wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am. But that's not what we got. So I wasn't super, super into that. We then move on to the Gift of the Gods championship match. Or so it would appear. And that's...
Swerving all over the place.
This is what really... I love...
That's what took us out of the episode.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love the Gift of the Gods championship. I think it's the coolest championship in pro wrestling.
Really awesome concept and very unique. And I mean, you know, it can only really be Lucha specific.
Yeah, Lucha specific. Visually, it's amazing. Like it's the title belt that I want a replica of more than any other. Like the medallions alone and just everything like that. It's such a cool championship. And the way that it has been done in Lucha Underground, I like. Again, you chase for the medallions and then you have one big match to determine the winner. I already was against eliminating a person from the match last week, and now we find out this week it's because Antonio Cueto then announced that it wasn't going to be for the Gift of the Gods championship, but rather two trios teams would face each other and then compete. The winners would be in a triple threat. What was your reaction to that?
No, I hated it. I like the idea that the Gift of the Gods and just the whole competition to get that championship can be spanned thousands of years, and you can imagine what it was like as far as just like a representative of each tribe going at it. And I think the concept is just so cool, and there's already a build up to it because of all the matches where you earn the medallions. I had a problem with how quickly we were just handing medallions out left and right the past few weeks, and it made me a little nervous as far as how they were taking the championship seriously this time. It seems like they just wanted to put it on somebody so that they can move on to the next part of the story. And yeah, all of this was just terrible to me. And then when they split the two teams up, I said, well, there's one team I certainly want to win. Nothing against the other three people who I do like.
Yeah, exactly. So I enjoyed talking to you about like sort of who we thought would fare in this match. And then this like totally took me out of it. It's like, oh wow. So like, we're only getting like half the field here. I the one thing I did like about it is the callback to Evil East and Son of Havoc being, you know, having success together as trios champions, and obviously they would pick the Mac to be with them. I like that.
Hopefully something gets rekindled there. Remember the magic, guys.
Yeah, dude, right? Like, we ship it. We ship it. Maybe they kick out Killshot and Ivelisse joins up with them. And they have Trios Gold again, although then I just miss Angelico. But
I know, nothing against the Mac, but, you know, the magic was in that original team.
It's true. It's very
true.
The
functionality through their dysfunction. That was what was so great about them.
It's a shame that Ricky Mundo killed Angelico. So
we don't know what that doll made him do.
He killed the South African string bean, dude. It's over. But so we did get a trios match. So it was Desmond X, Dragon Azteca Jr., and King Cuerno taking on Son of Havoc, Ivelisse, and the Mac for the right to then compete for Gift of the Gods. All that said, it was a hell of a trios match, I thought. I really enjoyed the match. What did you think about it?
Yeah, the match was fine, but like I said, I'm already taken out of it just because of the what led us up to that match.
Yeah.
There's not a person in this match I don't like. I think all of them are very talented, and they're all great. But then it also came down to who do I want to see win the Gift of the Gods in the first place? And there were two people that I basically had my eye on, and it was El Dragon Azteca Jr. and King Cuerno, and they just happened to be on the same team. So I said that team has to win.
I felt the exact same way, and also I do like how they are sort of putting over Desmond X's sort of meteoric rise and everything like that, like if he were to win the Gift of the Gods championship. This to me was a great coming out couple of matches for Desmond X. So spoiler alert, King Cuerno, Azteca, and Desmond did win in a good match, but just kind of a flat finish. So then we go to the triple threat match. I thought.
Oh, well, we could talk about Mil Muertes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So.
Well, and Killshot comes out, and he's just sitting on top of the stairs, and he's watching, staring daggers at his two teammates.
Yeah, he hates them, so he's staring. He's like, hey, friends.
Hate Son of Havoc for joining the team for no reason, even though it's not that Son of Havoc forced his way in. And then, hates oh, my God.
The Mac.
Yeah, the Mac. I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank here. And he hates the Mac for choosing Son of Havoc over Killshot when he said, yeah, we can just team up against him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's completely out on his own.
They're like his frenemies right now. So, yeah, he was scouting and sniping during the match.
Killshot likes having a rival, and with Dante Fox gone, he needs to make new enemies.
Dude, and again, I've said this before, I feel more and more vindicated every week about my support of Dante Fox over Killshot in that storyline. I think Dante was the victim this whole time.
We see how he treats allies.
Yeah, exactly. He's a bad guy.
Not see that coming.
So after the match, like you were alluding to, so Mil Muertes, who had been eliminated from Gift of the Gods by the Mac last week, came down to get his revenge on the Mac and everyone in his path. That is when Killshot decided to strike, and he inadvertently kicked Son of Havoc. I don't think it was so inadvertent, but that's what we were led to believe.
Was that in the commentary? Because I seriously didn't even hear that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was obvious that he was just Killshot doesn't miss.
Exactly, he's a sniper. Yeah. He's a
that's
sniper.
All he does.
He used the cover to get a clean shot,
and he had been aiming for Son of Havoc the entire match.
Yeah, exactly. And then Mil Muertes took care of him, Killshot as well. So
because he flies solo.
Yes, exactly. So it looks like we're gonna be headed towards like what a Mil Muertes and the Mac feud, which I'm down for that. Those should be some hell of matches that we're gonna get there.
Yeah, and then of course Killshot and Son of Havoc are eventually going to have to duke it out.
Yeah, we got to get the trios titles on a functional unit though.
I'm wondering if they're just going to have to be stripped of the titles and we'll do something like that, because I can't imagine them having a match without it end up coming off as, you know, sort of lame, because of course they're going to lose and it's going to be because they all turn on each other.
Yeah, I think that's probably what we're going to get though. I just wonder who the trios team is going to be.
That's what I'm trying to think
maybe,
of.
Maybe the Reptile Tribe or Worldwide Underground.
I was going to say, there's really no teams going on right now that aren't going against each
Rabbit
other.
Rabbit Tribe.
The Rabbit Tribe. Actually, you know what? It would be awesome for the Rabbit Tribe to have that. Give them something.
Yeah.
He just found the White Rabbit, did a weird sacrifice, and got nothing for it.
Yeah, so maybe
lost to a newcomer.
Yeah. I want a follow-up from that, too, because it was so bizarre. So the Gift of the Gods match itself, though, I thought it was a great main event. I know it's not what we wanted, and I was I was kind of pissed watching it because I was like, what are we doing here? Like, why are we changing this all around? I watched it again. It's a really good match, and it is a really fun way for Desmond to showcase what he can do, Dragon to get a big win, and King Cuerno just to continue to establish that he is just so smooth in there and is one of my favorite luchadors around. Like, I love King Cuerno, and I hope he's Lucha Underground champion someday. He is really, really good, and I'm looking forward to him sort of being... now that he's not in the Gift of the Gods picture, going back to the Gauntlet storyline and seeing what's going on with that, because that's that. I mean, even though that's not a title, that is like a majorly important story in Lucha Underground. So I think that's why they didn't have King Cuerno go over here. And it's a big win for Dragon Azteca, who still sort of has unfinished business with Pentagon anyway.
Yeah, I guess it ended the way it was supposed to. Going into last night, I was assuming King Cuerno was going to win the whole thing. Or that's at least who I had most of my money on, I guess you could say. But like you said, yeah, King Cuerno is kind of in a storyline. That's what I like about Lucha Underground is you don't have to have a title or be in pursuit of a title to have something really important going on with you. There are actual storylines that matter. And then as far as, yeah, El Dragon Azteca Jr., we've been talking about how this season's sort of a coming out season for him as well, too. He's come back, he's looking bigger, he's looking stronger, he's looking more mature. And, yeah, he's never really finished what he was doing with Pentagon. Boy, that's a feud that's, you know, gone over a couple of seasons now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I liked on commentary that Stryker put over, you know, after all the tutelage he's had, that the learner, he's now, the student's now the master. Kind of deal, and he's Gift of the Gods champion. So we'll see when he cashes in. Do you think he's going to be like defending it, or do you think he's going to cash in right away?
I don't see him defending it. I think he will cash it in. I think we will see a match between him and Pentagon, 2-3 weeks down the road.
Yeah, That is the one thing about the Gift of the Gods. It's like, yeah, you just want to cash it in and get the championship anyway. But so cool. I feel like I'd want to hold on to it and defend it a little bit. That's why it was cool when King Cuerno had it. I think they could have actually extended that out longer. That sort of like he was sort of under the thumb of Katrina and Mil Muertes and had made an agreement.
Yeah, and they were using him as a buffer, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would have been cool to keep that going for longer, because then you have a secondary title in Lucha Underground to, you know, sort of worry about. That's a singles one. That's not just a cash in. But so as it is, I mean, Azteca has no such ties to not want to cash in. Huge win for him, but that is not where the episode ended. It ended with an appearance of Mariposa and Marty the Moth, with her waking up a bashed Marty and telling him that he needs to get his life together, essentially, and that he is special and destined for bigger things in Lucha Underground. But some of the things that jumped out to me in this vignette were when he's talking about how he's having a dream about Melissa Santos. He's like, I gave her a necklace. And I'm like, wait a minute. And he's like, oh, it was a Pentagon's teeth, which I didn't know he had a teeth fixation, but apparently he does. That's a new thing.
Yeah, I don't know when that started either.
What did you think about the vignette? And now it looks like that Marty and Pentagon are on a collision course now.
I like Marty. I like the Moth Tribe. They haven't really done too much recently, so it'll be good to see them kind of back on track. He's a fearsome opponent when you actually, you know, get him in the ring. I was thinking the speech she was giving to him, it was sort of like Tywin and Jaime Lannister. I need you to be the man you're meant to be tomorrow, not next month. Not next year, you know, it's like now.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, Marty the Moth, they're a wealthy tribe, and obviously he's eccentric and weird, and they've just kind of put up with it. But it's like, yeah, are you going to do something or not? Because it can't just be Mariposa who's doing everything.
Yeah, and we haven't really seen them at all this season outside of Aztec Warfare, so...
Exactly.
I am down for them to get more involved. I think Marty is a fine sort of because he's an imposing force in the ring. He's a very good sort of, again, like I think they're trying to recreate Prince Puma's fighting champion run a little bit, but he's a very good monster of the week opponent for Pentagon to defeat. I don't see Marty winning the championship at this juncture. And I see it leading to probably more of an implosion between him and Mariposa. But I think he's a good challenger for Pentagon to cut his teeth on, to keep his reign going. And then we'll probably roll into Pentagon versus Dragon Azteca. And, you know, we'll see what happens from there. But yeah, I wasn't expecting Marty to get shot into the title picture. So that's good. That's good for Marty. Only good things. And we will see what happens next week on Lucha Underground. Before we go, however, do have a bit of sad news that we have to talk about. Wrestling deaths happened this past week. Three that we were made aware of all in one day. Brickhouse Brown apparently died on July 20th. From prostate cancer. Nikolai Volkov passed away at the age of, like, I don't know, he really wasn't that old. And maybe most tragically, taking his own life, Grandmaster Sexay Brian Christopher passed away, the son of Jerry Lawler. I was crushed by that news, especially about Brian Christopher. I was such a huge fan of Too Cool. During the Attitude Era, Too Cool and Rikishi were such an over, you know, they if they had had Trios belts, they would have been Trios champions in WWE. They were a really over group. It's just super sad to hear that you know, Brian was dealing with a lot of addiction issues, took his own life in jail from reports. So that is incredibly sad, but you know, just. It seems like sort of the lot in life of a lot of times people in wrestling, they die far too young. So I don't know if you have anything you wanted to add to that, Jeff.
No, like you, just a fan as a teenager. I was a big fan of them, especially once Rikishi joined the group, because that made them formidable.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, they were always fun to watch even before that.
Yeah, and they really were. I mean, they were one of those things that was – it's rare in wrestling when you hit on some magic like that, because it could have been very easy, like come off stupid and everything like that. But their shtick really worked. It was the right group of people. Him and Scotty Too Hotty really worked well together. He's one of the people that, like, my dad, like, really resonated with my dad. Like, so many times, like, hey, do you remember Grandmaster Sexay? Like,
yeah, exactly.
And like, so one of those wrestlers that really, you know, was super memorable, and they were a stitch in time at one of the most popular times in professional wrestling. And yeah, you just, I just never thought it would go that way. And you hate to think about that. Condolences go out to all three of their families and everything like that. And on a sad note, that is going to end this episode of Lucha Lowdown. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.